From Vermont Public Radio, this is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. It's Monday, October 26th. Today on the podcast...
Then the cyanobacteria hits, and it's just a big letdown for everybody.
First, today's headlines.
Vermont's COVID-19 case count has gone up pretty steeply in the past few days. The Department of Health reported 28 new cases on Sunday, and that comes after 26 new cases reported Saturday and 30 on Friday. These are numbers we haven't seen since the early days of the pandemic. This is the highest 7-day rolling average since April. 20 of yesterday's new cases were in Chittenden County, where St. Michael's College is struggling with a major outbreak. 8 other new cases have been confirmed around the state. Those are in Franklin, Rutland, Washington, Windsor, Caledonia, and Orleans counties. 3 people are hospitalized with the disease.
The Brattleboro Retreat, which is one of the largest employers in southern Vermont and a key piece of Vermont's healthcare system, announced a large round of layoffs late on Friday. 85 positions were cut, and several programs were eliminated, including 2 different opioid addiction services. This comes at a time when overdose deaths are again on the rise in Vermont. It's also cutting its child care program and its K-12 school. The retreat says it needs to save $8 million after years of requiring state support to remain afloat. It's preserving its inpatient psychiatric services. We'll have a lot more on this later in the show.
Officials were forced to close Burlington's beaches on Lake Champlain a record number of times this year. And that's because of blooms of toxic cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae. The blooms pose worrisome health threats, especially if they get into drinking water. Yet as John Dillon reports, ongoing pollution and climate change mean that algae blooms are likely to persist for years to come.
We got everything packed up yesterday and we're shut down for the winter.
Alec Keating is campground and beach manager for the Burlington Parks and Recreation Department. He's entered the season of maintenance, repairs, and writing budgets, all the work needed to get ready for another season on the shores of Lake Champlain.
Getting some work done in the campground and hopefully down at the beach and just getting the numbers ready for next year so we're prepared to give the best experience possible to the citizens of Burlington and all the visitors from out of state.
Keating says one of the favorite parts of his job is walking around the campground early in the morning, listening to people waking up and smelling the campfires and outdoor grilling. This year, he had to deliver bad news along with his warm welcome. Toxic blooms shut down the beaches 44 times this summer compared to 11 times the year before.
It's frustrating for me because I want to see everybody have a lot of fun. It's frustrating for my staff because the same reason, they want to see everybody have fun. And it's very frustrating for the customer that comes, packs up all the kids, comes down, wants to enjoy a nice day at the beach. And then the cyanobacteria hits and it's just a big letdown for everybody.
Cyanobacteria are microscopic in size but devastating in their impacts. They produce toxins which have killed dogs and sickened humans. Exposure has even been linked by some researchers to the neurological disorder ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. That's why officials like Keating are quick to get people out of the water when they see a bloom. And under the right conditions, like this summer's hot and dry weather, the blooms spread extremely rapidly.
I believe we had a 2-day closure here at North Beach where we found it at 11, and it was just one little spot. And within a half hour, it had spread from Texaco all the way to Rock Point, and it was just pure pea soup.
For those unfamiliar with Burlington, that's more than a mile of the city's lakeshore coated quickly with an alien-like slime. Cyanobacteria are always present in the lake, but warm, nutrient-rich water offer the prime conditions for the bacteria to explode. And these are the twin threats facing the lake. The lake stays warmer longer due to climate change, while phosphorus pollution from agriculture and other sources continue to feed the blooms. Keating says he knows that dealing with the blooms and beach closings will be part of his job for years to come.
It's a long road. It's not a quick fix, that's for sure. It's when we have blooms here and we educate the public, that's the biggest thing, is educating everybody on what's causing this. You know, what can we do as each person to stop, to help stop that? So,
closed beaches are certainly an inconvenience, but 200,000 people also get their drinking water from Lake Champlain. While Vermont water systems have mostly not reported cyanobacteria contamination, that has happened just over the border in Quebec with a public system that draws its water from Lake Champlain's Missisquoi Bay. And a huge bloom on Lake Erie in 2014 contaminated Toledo, Ohio's water supply. More than 100 people got sick, and the water couldn't be used for drinking until the bloom cleared.
I think it's fair to say this is an area of concern in Vermont as well as nationally. You know, it's one of the contaminants of emerging concern that, you know, people are dealing with.
Brian Redman is director of the Drinking Water and Groundwater Protection Division for the Department of Environmental Conservation. He's part of a new state group that's looking at cyanobacteria issues, including how to keep them out of water supplies. The federal and state governments don't set mandatory safety limits for cyanobacteria in drinking water, although they do have advisory standards. Redmond says the new working group may recommend additional state regulation.
It's seen a little bit of delay due to COVID, but it's a strategic assessment that we're engaged in to look at future regulation, our approach to managing cyanotoxins in Vermont, both in drinking water and recreational waters.
One public water system in Grand Isle did report cyanobacteria in the water in September at levels almost three times the state advisory limits. But Redmond says it was found in raw water, not the treated water sent to consumers, and that subsequent tests showed nothing. The Grand Isle test results were noticed by James Ellers, a policy advisor to Lake Champlain International, who routinely scours the state's water quality databases. He says the testing of water systems is spotty, usually only once or twice a week, and he questions why the public was not told of the Grand Isle test results.
There was no public notification made at that point between the time that they resampled to get a safe sample. So does that mean that for that period of days in between the unsafe sample and the safe sample, that the public was being exposed to cyanotoxins?
The Grand Isle plant operator did not respond to a request for comment. But Julie Moore, the Secretary of Natural Resources, says that since most water systems draw from deeper, cleaner parts of the lake, the supplies are generally safe. Moore says this year's drought meant less phosphorus pollution reached the lake, but she says the problems on the lake were decades in the making and will take decades to resolve.
There is a component of our water quality work that's an exercise in patience, but at the same time underscores the importance of sticking with the impactful work we're engaged in on the ground, from wetland restoration to stormwater management to agricultural stewardship projects.
But until those efforts yield results, you can expect the blooms and beach closings to persist for years to come. For VPR News, I'm John Dillon.
So as we mentioned earlier, late on Friday afternoon, the Brattleboro Retreat announced that it's laying off 85 employees and cutting four programs to close an $8 million budget gap. I spoke with Retreat CEO Louis Josephson about this decision and about the retreat's years-long financial woes. We should mention here that the Brattleboro Retreat is a VPR underwriter. And here's part of our conversation. I first asked Josephson why the cuts are necessary right now.
Well, they're necessary, as you mentioned in your lead-in, that we've had our financial challenges in the last couple of years, and we've been working really tightly with the Agency of Human Services on a sustainability plan that's been very public in the legislature and here with our staff that focuses on the retreat as the real kind of inpatient hub that we are for the state of Vermont. We're one of the largest providers of inpatient psychiatric care. We're the only provider of inpatient psychiatric care for children and adolescents. We are focusing on that as our core mission, which it's been really since our inception 186 years ago, and have to because of financial reasons, not because of the value of other programs, but strictly because of financial pressures to reduce or eliminate programs where we just can't subsidize them anymore in our current structure.
Well, I want to talk about a few of the programs that are being cut. First, your addiction treatment hub. This is being cut at a time when overdoses and overdose deaths are up significantly this year. Why cut this program right now?
For us, it's really about scale. So when I started at the retreat about 5 years ago, we had about 160 patients in our hub. Today, we have about 70. And there's multiple reasons for that. Some patients have gone to other providers. Some are served in the SPOKE program, which is terrific. That's sort of the supported program in primary care practices that the retreat does and will continue to do into the future. But the hub itself has shrunk. And for us, at that level, number of patients, we cannot make it succeed financially. So we've worked, again, really closely with Human Services, ADAP, the Substance Abuse Department of Human Services, and the Department of Mental Health, to have a plan to transition patients either to the SPOKE or to another provider in the Brattleboro area.
Well, you're also cutting some education programs, a child care center, as I mentioned, and a K-12 program, which serves both students who are at the retreat and elsewhere in the community. What will those students do for school once these programs close?
Kids who are here in being served by retreat programs, either in residential care or in inpatient, we have teachers who provide that academic teaching and instruction that they need. Over many years, we had developed a school portion of the retreat that would serve kids in the surrounding communities who, in a small rural school district, if you have one or two kids with severe behavioral issues in the classroom, it's very hard for them to meet those needs. So we started taking those kids from outside the retreat. Right now, we have 17 children who are from outside the retreat in about seven different school districts, including Claremont, New Hampshire. So my hope is that no single school district will have a large number of students who are impacted. They'll probably have one, two, three students at most.
I want to talk more about the layoffs that are part of these cuts. 85 positions. That's a significant number. Given that, are you and other leaders also taking pay cuts along with this?
We haven't so far. Everything is on the table. We have not had pay cuts of any sort for staff at any level here at the retreat. We are doing really a reorganization and a restructuring, which we think is the best way forward to right our financial ship. If salary reductions make sense and can make a difference, they will be done. I can tell you that I did not take a salary increase for 4 years when I started here. If salary reductions make sense as part of the solution here, everything is on the table.
As I mentioned before, the retreat has been in a precarious financial situation for years. I mean, what is at the root of this situation, which has led to today having to cut up to $8 million from your budget? I mean, is mismanagement an issue here?
I don't think so at all. I think what's the issue is being mission-driven. This is Vermont, right? And we care, and we've been here 186 years. And for us, every single day, it's all about our patients and serving them well. And if anything, I would say management and board, you know, predating me and in my tenure as well, we put that first. And so we have dug into our pocket and our reserves and our resources to keep things going for many, many years. And as we've said very publicly at the beginning of 2020, we've whittled those resources down at this point. So it's been a long time coming, many, many years. I don't think it's mismanagement whatsoever. It's being mission-driven.
And Henry, it is again time for America's favorite podcast segment.
Bonus data. Today's number is 26. As in 26 miles, which is how much stream habitat was opened for fish after state and volunteer groups removed a large dam on a tributary of the Dog River in Northfield. The 100-foot-long Camp Wiacoe Dam was built in 1920 to create a pond for a summer youth camp. Removing old dams is becoming a big priority for environmental and wildlife groups. Almost all freshwater fish migrate to reproduce, to find food, and to access cooler waters in the heat. And dams on rivers and streams make that really difficult. and they threaten the survival of many species. There are more than 1,000 dams on Vermont's rivers, and hundreds of them no longer serve any useful purpose, but they still keep fish from accessing their habitat. The nonprofit Friends of the Winooski River says that the project will lead to the removal of 1,500 full dump trucks worth of sediment. The Fish and Wildlife Department celebrated this dam removal over the weekend.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at thefrequency@vpr.org. Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.